With over 50 million lifetime views, CFRC Power Plays is the defining voice in Queens football coverage.
Looking for Nico Cuomo. Cuomo, my goodness! Nico Cuomo with a touchdown!
Follow us today on Instagram at CFRC Power Plays, your number one spot for rock solid football action.
And good afternoon. Let's adjust the volume here a bit. It's a few seconds after 4 o'clock. Thanks for tuning in to CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located here in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce, and this is Finding a Voice, a spoken word program airing here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And coming up on the show today, this was planned to air about a month ago, so it's so nice to be back in studio again. And in the first hour, you're going to hear from a February 14th event at Grains and Goods Coffee Bar Studio 330 West. And it was actually the launch of a new Kingston series on Kingston's or in Kingston's West End called Common Language, Poetry Reading and Coffee Bar. You'll hear a welcome by Liz Huntley Jens, who is the founder, and then readings by Callista Markotich and me. So, and in the second hour and in the second half, of that common language event, you'll hear poetry reading by Liz Huntley Jens, combined with music by Daniel Bucksteed on bass. And then following that, from a February 24th book launch at Novel Idea Bookstore, you'll hear Greer Stothers launching Apparently Sir Cameron Needs to Die. My usual start of the hour announcement is that occasionally some poetry, spoken word, or music played on this show may contain strong language, but all is played in its entirety with content pretty much unedited. When I do have to do that, though, I hope to still honor the creative integrity of both the author and the piece. I'll tell you what, though, it's a little bit different. This was a long event, and so, again, as you saw, the first half will air in the first hour, second half in the second hour. Normally, I would usually towards the end of the hour is when I pull in a few recorded announcements or promos or public service announcements. But I'm going to kind of reverse it a little bit today, and I thought maybe it'd make it smoother if I just do this or do that, I guess, first. And so let's go ahead and do that, and I will be right back.
Hey, 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 you want to kick the summer heat and get a nice treat? Don't hesitate to make a date to visit Old Farm Fine Foods. Pizza, frittata, sausage rolls, sandwiches, soups, and more are ready and waiting to get in your belly. Plus, you can also buy fresh and frozen food to prepare at home. Pop into the shop Monday through Sunday between 8 to 6 at 204 Berry Street. And don't forget to follow Old Farm Fine Foods on Instagram at OldFarmFF to get the scoop on the latest goodies. Old Farm Fine Foods, comfort food you can count on.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if you could borrow a musical instrument free of charge, just like you can borrow books from your local library? We think so too. That's why the Joe Chitlin Memorial Musical Instrument Lending Library, also known as Joe's Mill, has been lending guitars, keyboards, saxophones, and many other instruments to the Kingston community free of charge for almost 20 years. We are a registered charity, relying solely on the generosity of our community to donate their time, money, and instruments to keep this amazing service alive. Find us at www.joesmill.org or Joe's Mill on Facebook for more information on borrowing instruments or contributing to Joe's Mill.
Hello and welcome to Salt Licked in Rapture. I'm your host, Nishan Tung. Salt Licked in Rapture is a sonic exploration of, to quote Virginia Woolf, violent waves of emotion. Featuring both known and lesser-known musicians and poets, a special emphasis is placed on oddball, enigmatic, outsider artists whose work invokes dreamscapes and feelings of alienation, nostalgia, melancholy, existential unease, and yearning. Join me on Fridays at 8 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM.
And again, you are listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located again in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce, and I am here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And it is quickly approaching now, 6 minutes after 4 o'clock. So let's go ahead and move into this hour's feature. And then at the top of the second hour, shortly after I introduce the show again in the second hour, you're going to hear the other half of that feature. But again, in case you tuned in a minute or two late, just to reintroduce what you're going to hear now, was from a February 14th event at Grains and Goods Coffee Bar, Studio 330 West, and was the launch of a new Kingston series on Kingston's West End called Common Language Poetry Readings and Coffee Bar. And here in this first hour, in the first half of that event, you're going to hear a welcome by Liz Huntley Yench, who is the founder, and then readings by Calista Markotich and me. So tell you what, let's go ahead and just do that now. Here we go.
I feel a little bit weird with this pop star microphone situation. Don't worry, there will be no choreographed dance moves. Although, actually, I'm not going to do any. Maybe Bruce or Kelly have something fun up their sleeves. I'm Liz, for those of you that haven't met me yet. And this event is kind of a fun little circuitous thing. So my husband Roland and I used to own Studio 330, but not this location. And then in 2022, we opened Grains and Goods Bakery in Sydenham. And then we quickly realized that having multiple children and multiple small businesses in our lives was not going to work. So we sold Studio 330 to Nathan McCready, who is its current owner. And in April of last year, he expanded, so he still has the downtown location that we had, and he also has this location as well. And then he had like kind of a junk room over there that had storage in it, and invited us to open a coffee bar instead of having the room full of junk. So here we are. And in the last couple of years, I've been really happy to be getting involved in the poetry scene in Kingston, which is very vibrant and very much happening entirely downtown. So it seems like a nice idea for Roland and I to do something in the West End to bring poetry and abundant free parking together. So here we are. Thanks for being here. February 14th is an auspicious date, but that's not why we chose to be here tonight. Our good friend Daniel Buchstieg is visiting from Germany. He wanted to see what Canada was like in February. So Daniel is a professional bass player. He's very talented and travels around Europe doing all kinds of things with different groups. And when Roland and I lived in Germany, we also did lots of collaborations with Daniel playing for our various yoga events. So I'm excited to have him here playing for our poetry event now. I'm going to start with a kind of Valentine's poem, just because it is February 14th. This is not a poem that I wrote. It's a poem from Hafiz, who's a famous Persian poet. And it's called "The Subject Tonight is Love." It's very short. Make some sounds if you want. The subject tonight is love, and for tomorrow night as well. As a matter of fact, I know of no better topic for us to discuss until we all die. And I was thinking, you know, I mean, every poem, I think, in its essence, is a love poem, no matter what it's about. When we write poetry, it's because we care, and we want to pay attention to something. And so a poem is always an act of loving an environment or a community or even ourselves. So you'll hear all kinds of love poems tonight, which may or may not appear to be love poems on the surface. The program is that Daniel will start us off with a song, and then I will come back to introduce Callie, who is our first reader, and then Callie will introduce Bruce, who is our second reader, and then we'll have a little intermission, and then I'll come back and Daniel and I will do some music and poems together. The coffee bar is open. If you want to get something along the way, you're welcome. One little housekeeping thing is that if you're using that accessible bathroom, when you exit, please push the wheelchair button thing. I'm sure it has a more official name than that. But if you just open the handle and come out, then the door is locked from the outside and nobody else can get in. So please push the automatic door button if you're coming out of that bathroom. On that note, please join me in welcoming Daniel. Studio just north of here in, I think, 2022, and I'm her biggest fan. Probably actually not, she probably has a lot of big fans. So Callie is a retired teacher, principal, and superintendent of education, and she returned to her desk to write poetry, a lifelong aspiration which she did not expect to realize. Her award-winning poems are found in many Canadian journals and quarterlies and have received Pushcart and National Magazine nominations. She is particularly proud of her chapbook, Edward, finalist in two important 2024 competitions, and her recent poems in the New Quarterly's 2025 Occasional Verse Contest. Her 2024 collection, Wrap in a Big White Towel, published by Frontenac House, was a finalist for the 2025 Gerald Lampert Memorial First Book Award, and she is a contributing editor at ARC Poetry. Please join me in welcoming Callie.
Here that I see at the open mic. It's great. It's really great. And thank you very much for coming. Thanks, you, Liz. It was so nice of you to do this. And it's beautiful to have music like that, too. It's nice not to have to project our voices as well. Maybe I'll be shouting at you. Let me know if it gets too loud. It's Valentine's Day, and I like what Liz said, that most poetry, somehow or other, it is about love, because you're going deep, and that's where love resides. And my husband is here tonight. he often drives me to these, but he doesn't always stay for all the poems. Uh-huh. So to reward him, to reward him, there are poems about him. And I realized when I was getting them ready to read that in these poems about him, I didn't intend to do it, but I have addressed him in the poems. You know what I mean? Like the you, who I'm speaking to, the you, is him, even though he probably wasn't there when I was really writing it. But okay, so the first one is called Holiday in France. We were visiting a German military cemetery above an invasion beach. I remember the grasses spraying with crickets along the rows, softened by decades and coastal rains to emerald alleys with gravestones shaped like lozenges. And the bright Atlantic glittered her sapphires below us, and you performed some small subtractions with the numbers on the stones. And I followed you into the simple math. 16, 15, 17. They were boys, just boys. Bikes dropped curbside, school books jumbled into tottering stacks, pitchforks standing in the hay, and little brothers jumping up and down outside the windows of the train. Mother's hankies fluttering long goodbyes. How long did it take to thread a through line from tight throats and welling eyes into mortal dark disclosures in the red, wet maw of war's beast? How long to pull the curtains closed across eyes of boys, across the bluest sky of Normandy? I remember the pergola with the visitor's log, where people could write things down. How my fingers twisted the chain of the pen, and you, schooled from youth to keep the tumult of the heart within that sturdy pump, said Cal, you don't have to write anything if there's nothing you can say. Below us, the Atlantic shrugged her shining shoulders, the beautiful, helpless sea. With this second poem, you may probably get the impression that my husband likes to go to war sites, because he does. And when we did take that holiday in France, a lot of it was spent touring the invasion beaches. And we also went to Dieppe, which was a beach known for a disastrous Canadian raid where almost everyone perished. So this one was actually from the same trip. I don't think it was the same day, but it was in that trip. Love and War at Dieppe. Blood warm in Normandy sun, worn round as birdshot for a god-sized gun, beach stones cradle in your hand. You ease tendril-fastened baby teeth from trusting six-year-olds and quills from quivering muzzles of our dogs. You should offer me a lush strawberry, a fragile pheasant egg, anything but stones and war story. Picture rolling on a skate on a beach of these, hun. Tanks wallowed here like that. Oh, yes, yes, I know how beach stones fall into themselves, the sinkholes of the Dieppe raid. Your tawny eyes consult the overlooking hills, where dug-in gun embankments were, your face stunned, wondering at this wasteful way to die. I could smack them from your hand. Our opinions grind this way, like tank treads churning deeper, deeper mired, pinned like Allied tanks in crosshairs of brave history, tedious history. Our history. Didn't I doodle your name on my textbooks long ago? Didn't I make the O a pretty heart and push an inky arrow through it, oblivious of pulse and hurt and flow. Fish in a barrel, you murmur, helpless with reverence. Say, sitting ducks, with awe so thick, I see it's love you feel. White gulls squabble for a niblet in the stones, sky, sea. Your open hand to me, it is, it's love. Thick enough to spread upon this beach, enough to take my mighty share of it. Now, this one's a bit of a change, and it's short. It's a form poem called a triolet or a triolet, and it's only 8 lines, but there's a lot of repetition in it, and it has a very specific rhyme scheme. And usually, in order to try to make any point at all, you have to really work the lines. But then on the other hand, there's so much repetition that, you know, that's a little bonus because you get to hear several things 2 times. And this is after a book, a very important book about cancer research called The Emperor of All Maladies. It's a wonderful book, thick, difficult to read. I have read it twice, and I would have to read it at least 10 more times to really understand much of it, but it's very well written by an author called Siddhartha Mukherjee, the Emperor of All Maladies. And I called it Profligate Ruler. His scepter has bejeweled you, lesion, tumor, spot. The Emperor of All Maladies has cached his gems in you. In your body's grand mechanics, his cabochons are caught. His scepter has bejeweled you, lesion, tumor, spot. The CT scan, the MRI, his bijou must be sought. And each day flies us chiffon skies of sheer, heart-rending blue. His scepter has bejeweled you, lesion, tumor, spot. The Emperor of All Maladies has set his gems in you. Now, back to Dawn again. And this was written at a difficult time of some illness. I can read it now because it is in the past. Recessional. You lean on the lawnmower's handlebar, heavy-headed as a comma, a few good inches forfeit to fatigue's curve. Your progress in the grassy aisle is brave and grave and slow as a pavon, yet wearily triumphal on the new shorn turf. I want the boy you were at 9, crew-cut, striped-shirted, racing your soapbox down St. Patrick's straight steep hill, your pals and parents at the finish cheering their Mario Andretti, your heart a good red valentine that will find me in another 12 years. Late this morning, still in pajamas, you toyed with a triangle of toast. I see your geometry, young, the delta of your torso, one child across your width of shoulders, 2 others gamboling by your long, lean legs along the lake-bound path. The lawnmower, brick red with front self-powered wheels, cuts a lush green allée for your recessional. I want joyous chords crashing down from the organ loft, my satin sleeve in the crook of your arm, us turning to trip the long, long nave and greet our friends and families, and through the church's open doors, white mock orange blooms, and over the rooftop chimney pots across the street, a handkerchief of blue. You lean on the mower to help it turn and pull you into another row. The flying, falling blades of grass your shoes rich stained with emerald, symbol of the treasure spent in the corridor's cut. You look up from the row and see me watching. Smile your crooked, valorous smile. I want the longest row. I want you always in it. He's probably had enough. But these last two poems are about other kind of love, different love. One of them being very universal, I think. And I wouldn't be surprised if some people in this audience might remember this exact situation. And it's called Off the Grid. It's not referring to last March, but a few Marches ago. In March, a little boy was lost just north of here. He was 3. We could not sleep thinking of him in the bush alone. The second night, a storm crashed through. His coat and boots were blue. The woods in March doesn't show much blue. Through bare branches, sky, long reaches of the northern lakes, winter's lichened. Grays prevail and deep black angles in stony cliffs. Child of my child, so like that boy, I follow your small back through brush and bracken. Grapevine, thick as a constrictor, arcs from tree to wind-bleached grass. Under you go, delighted. You loop through twice, this bridge of wonder, mystic arch. We see a snake. You crouch on yellow rain boot heels and watch its sensing tongue. We hear the splashing skip of buffleheads and wend that way to see their crystal trail in the morning sun. From the limestone shelf, you point west along the waterfront, announce your house is over there. There's a winter faded cottage and a cabin painted red, but then the ledge turns and climbs steep above the bay. Child, you wouldn't get home this way. I clasp your sturdy ribs and hoist you, small, compact form in your jacket of bright blue. A quarter turn and in the bush, south of where you thought it was, we find your house, the gable end, a wedge of white filigreed by skeleton trees and underbrush. The creek bed that we followed cut oblique across our trail, tricked our sense of how things lie. And when we come upon a trammel track, our usual way, our feet are caked with mud, and for a second, we are lost. 3 days it was when searchers saw some blue, they said. They thought he was asleep. Asleep. Oh, please, asleep. Then, trembling in their arms, that night we weren't scared of dark. We slept. I dreamt a blue, secret bulb of gentian, elusive flit of jay, indigo bunting, tilting song into the blackbird's sharp skeevy. And I'll finish with one that I always finish with, so I do apologize if you've heard it before. I finish with it because one of my daughters told me I should, and at that age where I obey my daughters. And it's called, and it's another kind of love poem. It's called Narcissus of the Avians. A frenzied robin flails and flaps in excrement he's dropping on the sill. I can't put this robin in a poem for my mother. Alive, my mother flinched at words like shit. Yet it would flout the truth to leave unnamed what cakes the walkout windowsill. The glass a wingtip struck montage of dust and chaff and ordure smears. Alive, my mother loved robins, how they hop on twiggy legs, their pert head tilt towards the turf, their quick extraction of a worm, their nesting husbandry. But this one unsheathes talons now, thus so does that one in the glass. Cockfighters, they are equal, this and that one mirrored in the window. Matching rage, matching peck to vicious peck. This mate forsakes his family for the robin in the glass. cannot break the spell. Huffed, affronted, neither does he sweetly kiss the image that exposes him, unworthy, bellicose bird of spring. I want to write a robin poem remembering my mother, remembering her call, her voice every March, that special day in early March, her lovely, optimistic voice. I have seen a robin, dear. Mom, this is not that robin.
Read the one in the back of the
book. I'm sorry about that.
It's okay, that's almost identical.
It's got to be here. That's the trouble with having three sources to read from.
I think we might have found it.
Yeah? I think we found it.
No, this is Liz's.
Oh.
Okay, Bruce.
It could be near the back.
All right. So I'm sorry about this. This isn't exactly the one we had, but
it isn't, but it's good enough.
Bruce Kaufman believes. He has faith. He treasures hope. This is the poet. This is ever crossing. These are the lines he organizes so purposefully in order to blend form and content, configuration and meaning into a substantial message aiming at nothing less than believing, because he must believe. And we are summoned to believe alongside him. Read Ever Crossings, Ruth Cosman 2025 book published by Wet Ink Books. Come to the meeting point where possibilities cross and recross in endless timeline of existing.
That's beautiful.
Thank you. There we go. Still working. Oh, I need my book. I didn't memorize it all. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Liz, for putting this all together. And let's give Liz a hand. This is wonderful. And thank you, Kelly, for your reading. That was beautiful, too. And for the introduction. I'm a little bit different. I come from a tradition where if a poet reads a long set, if you like clapping, wait until the end. If you still feel like clapping, clap then, because it kind of, there's a cadence sometimes with a series of poems, so I'd like to honor that. Once. Is that too loud? Once there was a day, or a moment, or a person, a thing so brilliant, so perfect, it could never happen again. And then it did. Questions again. I ask questions in the dark, alone. Not even sure if anyone is listening. I ask also for breath, and have been given that so far. So perhaps someone is. I too ask forgiveness for my occasional sense of not being enough or too much or of being lost when the way is and was clearly marked. To those times I have not heard a response. Perhaps it not needed. Perhaps the breath enough. On writing poetry, you will not write your best poems on paper, especially not a computer. You will seemingly write those instead with invisible ink on the backs of wild horses and ponies, or in a patterned remnant of tea leaves on the feathered tail of a dove, or in colored braille on the wings of a butterfly, a dragonfly. Those are the poems that will come back to you, each of them believing in you as much as you believed in them. I'm calling this next poem a poetic fable, and its title is There Was. There was a time before time where there was nothing except a small black dot. There in the center of a vast nothingness, until that dot believed it wanted to be more. There was no sight yet. Hearing came first. That dot could hear a soft voice. And yes indeed, even today dots can hear. I mean, even a period knows when a sentence ends. But back to this. That soft voice said to the dot, "And now, too, I give you sight. Open your eyes. I have created a small pool of a new thing. Let's call it water. And created it from nothing but two parts of air. Look at yourself in it." The dot looked, saw only its tiny black self, nothing else. There was nothing beyond just the small pool in front of it, holding within that dot's reflection. Nothing else at all, in front of, around, or behind. And so, because it could hear, the dot asked that soft voice for music. That music of color, that magic of time. And the soft voice said, "Granted." And so, you see, there was no big bang. Instead, but the tiniest of spark, barely a colored flash, and the universe became. Rails. Westbound train boarded this morning, no destination, no getting off, nearly a continent away, taking it all the way to the West Coast. I'm anonymous, a number, ticket number, 20 Via Rail Canada Economy, car 4, window, Toronto to Vancouver. That's who I'll be for the next few days. At least tens of thousands of others have been the same. Same name, same seat, same train, same car, same ticket. I boarded alone. We'll ride this rail, disembark the same. This trip isn't about people, just the country, landscapes, the closeness of it, days of it, four. Never considered the not enough airplane with its glossy cover magazine ride showing everything and nothing. Its few hour long short expedition without heart, memoryless after. I need something more. Want a trip that has a pulse. I will disembark on the West Coast, stay maybe a day or two. and get back on board, come back the whole way again, alone and not. This poem is called For Father Again, a quarter century on. I'd never seen my father cry in all the years I was a child, and even further on, I, a young adult and then middle-aged. In those days in that part of the world, most felt the man crying was a sign of weakness. Even in his, those later years and his failing health, less mobile life, in it, he able to still get around a bit and able to fully talk and carry on long conversations. I did not see him once in it all ever weep about his weakened physical health or abilities. But during the Christmas seasons, with Christmas music filtering every year in low volume throughout my parents' home, in the final two of those years, for a bit, he would excuse himself from the main room all of us were in as he secured and positioned his cane to go into the adjacent room and sit beside the stereo there whenever his favorite Christmas album would begin to play. And I would peek around the corner of our room into the one he was in, making sure he was okay. And he, unaware I was watching, I would find him there, silently weeping, his head bowed, eyes closed, tears running down his face. And somehow then, even then, I believed it was more gentle for him, to him, to leave him there alone, believing he would have preferred it that way, to have that space and time to himself. That nearly 30 years ago now, and I now already older than he was then, and 8 years older than he lived to be. And again, this evening, a lingering regret that in those two holiday seasons, him there beside that stereo turntable, I never asked him as he sat there alone where he was then and what did he see. And who we are, as I or you, exit whatever is that ever next door, we carry an endless hope that we loved and cared for and perhaps even helped more people than we disappointed. This is called Revisiting. This morning a memory arrives in a softness and fine mist, surrounding me in an as-if long-awaited embrace. This memory from very, very long ago. We lived in the country then, far away from any city, and far enough from even a tiny town. Often we had to travel by car to anywhere. My son, our son, in that time, decades ago, just a bit more than an infant, not even toddler yet. And always in those drives, strapped into his baby seat in the back. Quite early on, we noticed he, maybe then 5 or 6 months old, whenever we drove somewhere, anywhere, at some point in it, he would make a hand gesture using both hands. He would hold his left index finger straight up and then place his right index finger with another crossways on top of his left. And he was he was not speaking yet, so too young to ask. And as this kept happening more and more often over at least a couple of months, we were baffled by what it was all about. And this only happened when we were in the car. Then one day we were driving a longer drive to the city to see his doctor, in fact, for just a checkup. I could see him in the car's rearview mirror doing it again. And so for just a second, I quickly but safely, carefully, turned my head around to see the direction his head was turned and what he was looking at. Telephone poles. And so mystery solved. I believe we even relayed the whole story to his pediatrician that morning. But I don't think I fully understood until many years later. Perhaps not even until today, just now. Joe was not simply mimicking an image. He was speaking to it, speaking with it by assembly, learning a deeper language, connecting to and creating his world. And I just have two poems left. I want to thank you for listening. The first is called In Our Haste, What We Forget. I was sitting in a not crowded movie theater, still waiting for the show to begin, the usual perfunctory screens of slogans and messages about the lobby, concession stand, where the trash receptacles are, upcoming films, and extra attractions, when off to the side, with the house lights now quickly dimming, I watched someone coming in, and in the near dark now they slow walking their way up to their row. And what amazed me, that from their chest was a soft glowing light, as if emanating from within. For several seconds I sat astonished as that glow never went away. And out of the corner of my eye I saw a youngish child also watching that person. I looked over, said to them in just above a whisper, "Did you see that light too?" They turned to me as if almost surprised that I would ask, and said, "Yes, I did. And I still do, sir. Just like I saw everyone else's as they came in, yours too. I see it in everyone and everything, just like everyone else does all the time." And then the child, looking at me straight in the eye, said, "And I believe, sir, you used to see it that way too." And again, thank you. This is my final poem. Again, there is no word for this. We drop small things, pieces of ourselves, into woven baskets as we walk through rooms of days. We forget them then. We take ourselves out, we weather the storms within. We walk through rusted fire. Just being there again reignites it. 10 days on, it will burn down forests within us. We will be the ones, the only ones, to notice each our own smoke. We will not talk about it. We will even look away if someone else mentions it in themselves. We fear they will see in our eyes the fire, the smoke, the ashes, that trail we leave and have left behind us and beyond and within us. We are told that somewhere out there is a lake. It might even be just around the next corner, we tell ourselves. That place where we can cleanse it all, smother the fire, knock down the smoke, turn ash back to earth. Still, we have not yet seen that lake. We never seem to find it. We wander on, but the spirits, the voices, the poets tell me it is there, so I must believe. Thank you all very much.
Series called And the Journey Continues, which I know several people here know that quite well, that began in 2009 and since 2010 still produces and hosts a weekly two-hour radio show called Finding a Voice on CFRC 101.9 FM. Bruce, in 2015, began the annual summer outdoor poetry series Poets at Art Fest, in conjunction with Art Fest Kingston. And I'm sure some of you know that too. And now I have the pleasure.
Oh, it's not me yet. We're going to have a break first.
Are we?
Yeah.
Okay.
But at least you have my bio. Don't lose it.
I just want to book that. It's the same color as all the other pages. So.
So we will take a break. I actually, Kelly, I really liked the thing that you read out of Bruce's book. I think it started with Bruce Believes.
Yes.
I'll add to that, and we believe in Bruce.
Yes.
Thank you so much. I would like to mention that Callie and Bruce both have books available. They're on the bar stool over there. I don't actually know how you pay for them, though, so please connect with Callie or Bruce if you would like to buy one. And we'll just take like a little 10-minute break or something so you can stretch and mingle, and then we'll be back with more poems and music.
And you are and have been listening to Finding a Voice, and you just heard the first half of a February 14th event at Grains and Goods Coffee Bar, Studio 330 West, and the launch of a new Kingston series on in Kingston's West End called Common Language Poetry Reading and Coffee Bar. And you heard a welcome again by Liz Huntley Jens, and who is the founder, and then a brief song by Daniel Bucksteig, and then readings by Callista Markitich and me. And that first half, so that was the first half of that event that evening. I hope you can stay tuned to the second hour of the show today to hear both the second half of that event, in which you'll hear a poetry reading by Liz Huntley Jensch and music by, again, Daniel Bucksteig. And then after that, there's also time. You're going to hear from a February 24th book launch at Novel Idea. You'll hear Greer Stothers launching their new book called Apparently Sir Cameron Needs to Die. It is almost 55 minutes after 4 o'clock. This hour's gone by very quickly, honestly. I would like to thank all of you out there, first of all, for tuning into the first hour today. To Calista for her wonderful reading, and especially as well to Liz for setting up and debuting this incredible event that evening. And it really was very beautiful. Let's see. Some of this here is a little bit old. You know what I'm going to do? I've got just a few minutes. I'm just going to do a couple of quick notices of upcoming events. Right now, actually, it started today. Going on here in Kingston is Haiku Canada Weekend. From their website, it says activities include haiku readings, presentations, workshops, book fair, ginkgo walks, and collective renga. The weekend format allows for lots of exchanges and discussion, it says. This is a great opportunity to get to know other poets and enthusiasts in a relaxed setting. It looks like you may have to register, but you might still be able to. And it says, trying to find a website here. It says for to complete the form to register and for more information, go to www.haikucanada.org/index.php? Lang equal end or E N and page equals index. So hopefully that will get you there. And it's happening, I think, in or around Queen's campus, but you'll get all that information there. Then coming up, more launches on coming up this Tuesday, May 19th at 7 o'clock. Rowena Spring will launch her new book of fantasy called A Song to Drown the World. And you can check out more. I know they've got it up on their Facebook page now. So go to, this is happening at Novel Idea Bookstore again, which is at 156 Princess Street in Kingston. And their website has more information. So just go to their Facebook page. Novel Idea has a Facebook page, so go there. Also happening that same evening, there's an event called Quirks of Human Nature, and it's poetry with improvised music. It's a third Tuesday night of the month series, it features, it is a series put on by Deb Shermans and Meg Freer. The featured poet will be Jeannie Princeton, music by Abby Miole, guitar and voiced. Special guest is Whirligig, which is Margaret Moncrief, and one of Kingston's climate action champions with nature-based songs and poems. Then bonus poet two is Sonali Samaya. Deb Shermans is on piano, and Meg will MC. And then also coming up on Friday, another book launch event at Novel Idea, Nancy Jo Cullen. Will feature Nancy Jo Cullen, Aga Magsimowska, Lori Graham, Sadiqa De Meyer, and Liz Johnston. And it says Nancy Jo Cullen will lead the launch with readings by those four. And again, go to their Facebook Novel Ideas Facebook page. And that's happening Friday, May 22nd. And then on Saturday, I'm going to go outside of Kingston, May 23rd. In Belleville, there's an event called Night Kitchen 2 that features poetry and music. And Night Kitchen 2 is a not-for-profit project and provides a showcase for a diverse group of performers with their music, poetry, or spoken word on the stage in Belleville. It's held at the Belleville Theater Guild at Pinnacle Playhouse. which is located at 256 Pinnacle Street in Belleville.